Hey everybody, welcome to Surface Level, creating a community where Black and queer folks are fearless in thought and curious at heart. I'm one of your hosts, Damon, and today, Jordan, Tony, and I are discussing monkeypox. What are our thoughts on the fact that queer people have seemingly taken monkeypox much more seriously than COVID? What can government do to address monkeypox without further creating stigma around queer men? This is Monkeypox Chow. As always, serious topics, but we're still going to have a little fun. So we're going to start with a game.
All right. A monkeypox game?
I typically have a really smart, fun game. This one's dumb as hell.
Okay.
Y'all remember when they asked Beyonce what animal she wants to be?
She wants to be a whale.
I want to be a whale.
She wants to touch one
so
day.
So then I just started thinking about...
I thought she was high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then I just started thinking about a bunch of random ass questions that involved animals. And that's what we're going to do today.
Oh, okay. I see the correlation.
So you thought about these questions when you were high. I got it.
Basically. All right. So if you were a canine, would you rather be a wolf roaming free or a pampered pet?
A pampered pet. Absolutely. What am I going to do when it gets cold outside?
You're a wolf. You don't matter.
It do matter. I feel like they look cold.
Oh, my goodness.
I need to be indoors.
Indoors. Totally. I would like to be Lisa Vanderpump's dog.
Jiggy.
Jiggy. Because Jiggy is living in the lap, literally, well, of luxury.
You know, Jiggy has transitioned.
Oh, well, God rest the dead.
Rest in peace.
All dogs go to heaven.
All dogs do go to heaven.
They do.
My brand would say I want to run free and be a wolf. I would like to be a small wolf in my home. In the domicile.
A mini husky. Domesticated.
A small husky.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, next. So you are pursuing a partner. And sometimes it's a game of cat and mouse. Would you rather be pursued or be the person pursuing? Tony.
I'm going to say pursued. Mm-hmm. Court me. Yes.
Take me out.
Run after me. Do things.
Excuse me, miss. What's your name?
Come for me. But don't come for me if I don't send for you either.
Ooh, well, that's when it gets sticky.
Yeah. Jordan.
Pursued. It's just, you know, what?
She said pursued.
Pursued.
Pursued. I mean, you know, I like to... I don't know. I overthink things. So if I'm pursuing and I don't feel like it's being reciprocated, I'm like, okay, they hate me. So I'm moving on. But that may not be the case. So I just take all the guessing work out of it and I'll just be pursued.
Well, I mean, that's interesting.
Put that on our topics list for next season. Ironically, speaking of Jiggy, most iconic Real Housewives pet. Kenya Moore's Velvet. Or Lisa Vanderpump's Jiggy.
I mean, I'm just going to say Jiggy. I feel like there's more real estate. There's more space to roam around. Jiggy had brand deals. It just seemed like a much more cozy lifestyle.
I don't think Jiggy could walk.
Well, you know,
he was always on that pillow.
Towards the end of his life.
Jiggy was a, you know, young whippersnapper.
A youth.
Yeah. In their youth. I don't know if Jiggy was a boy or girl, so I'll just say. They were in their youth.
They're non-binary.
Non-binary. I would say Jiggy only because I know Lisa Vanderpump has a huge affinity for dogs. She
likes dogs more than people.
She did like that whole, I don't know what it was.
It was a walk for like dog rights.
Yeah. Because it was a fundraising sort of moment. And then she was very passionate.
Dorit got a dog and gave the dog back and it was a scandal. Oh my goodness.
Lucy Apple Juicy.
Wow.
She said the dog did not fit into my household. It was unhinged and it had to go.
I'm going to go with Jiggy also because Jiggy like peacefully got to lay down. Like, didn't Velvet get attacked by a wolf or a coyote or something?
Oh my God.
Really?
That's what happened. Or the dog next. Something crazy happened to Velvet. Oh, and I don't want to go out like that.
No. Atlanta.
In the Atlanta woods.
Atlanta woods. All right. So you're looking for a bit of adventure in your life. Would you rather swim with sharks or go on a safari? Tony.
I think I am intrigued by the swim with sharks moment.
Y'all, I'm not getting in that cage.
Yeah.
And that,
I think I'm intrigued. Like, it's the scarier moment for me, but it's like the one that I'm like,
Safari has staff with guns in case something goes wrong.
A staff with guns.
And I'm sorry for those animals. We shouldn't be fucking with the animals in the first place.
It's a preserve. They're not shooting. They're not gunning these animals down, are they?
If a lion attacks you on safari,
Well,
if the security don't shoot him, I'm grabbing the gun and going to town,
screaming at the top of your lungs while doing it. No, I agree with Tony. I mean, I feel like the safari's on my bucket list, but I just feel like I've been to the zoo. I've seen a lot of these animals.
Not the same.
I know that, but let me finish my sentence. I've seen these animals close-ish, but I've never been submerged in water and having like a huge fish like surrounding me. That feels more like of an out-of-body experience, and I feel like I like would be that. Rushing more. Yeah, it's kind of like jumping out of a plane. I feel like that would be interesting for me.
No, I don't think we should leave our environments where we can't survive.
Oh no, that's what make it fun, you know.
No, I also have been in South Africa on a mini safari. That is nothing like going to the zoo when that lion walks up to your car. Nothing like it. Ooh, and that's okay. That was enough excitement for me.
I actually just imagined it, and I actually don't.
I'm just like, you looking at the, there's like a 50-foot pit, lions over there, lion right here.
I'll just close my eyes probably.
Eat me, Jesus. All right, last one. If someone that you know, or that you're dating, does you wrong, are you packing up your kitty cat or allowing her to stay around and play? Jordan. Yeah.
I mean, everyone does wrong. So, I mean, it depends on how egregious the wrongdoing was. But I mean, you know, I feel like we can keep things in place. Yeah.
Can't play with the little yarn ball.
It's the summer. Yeah, why not? It's the summer.
Her cat is hot as hell. She gotta, I gotta fend myself up. Tony.
I think that it depends on how good the dog is.
Oh. All right, cat dog.
Is it an atomic dog?
You know, if it's an atomic dog, you might stick around for a little bit while I, you know, figure out I'm in transition.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I might pack up my kitty cat and skedaddle because there's plenty more dogs in the park. Can I pet that dog?
Yeah, pet the dog. All right. That was ridiculous. Very. So we're going to move into something a little more serious.
All right.
All right. So typically we do things on the show that are a little more evergreen, but in this moment, we thought it was really important to talk about healthcare, particularly among Black and queer people, especially with the monkeypox situation that is really impacting our community. So we wanted to start here. So Black Americans have often been more apprehensive around healthcare, particularly vaccination, and that topic has come up a lot, especially within the last 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. All of us have gotten vaccinated for COVID and monkeypox at this point. What factors have made us more trusting of the healthcare system and its ability to protect us? Jordan?
I don't think that I was ever not trusting of the healthcare industry. I was raised in a family that took healthcare very seriously. I had normal pediatrician visits. I had normal dentist visits. I was fully vaccinated. It was just a part of my upbringing. So when COVID hit everyone, mm-hmm. as it did, I actually was a bit surprised at just how many people were against the vaccine. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting that just because I was living in my bubble. And I feel mm-hmm. like this is the first time where like it was like a huge sort of global conversation around a vaccine. Whereas I feel like younger, you just did it. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't, no one really knew. Mm-hmm. And so I have sort of this outlook where I'm not the expert mm-hmm. on healthcare, science, that whole thing. I trust the people who have spent years studying how to contain viruses and the scientists that put in all the work to develop these vaccines. I trust them. And while I also understand the distrust of the healthcare system, I do feel like there's good people out there. And for me, my mind doesn't immediately go to the vaccine is a ploy to sort of harm the society. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when the COVID vaccinations, the appointments went up online, I was on that site like it was Beyonce concert tickets. Like, it was just like, okay, it's here. It's here, everybody. Like, right. Come on, it's right. time, yeah. right? Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. This is what we've been waiting for. And when people was like, no, I was like, really? Mm-hmm. So right. it was never an issue for me. But, you know, now reading more because it's become much more of a headline with COVID, I understand why. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that sign-up sheet later, because I have some thoughts around just that topic. And I think you guys may or may not know what I'm talking about, but we're going to get into some things. But that question was interesting, because when it comes to like the trusting of the what made me trust the healthcare system more, I really think that the fact that I just didn't want to die of ignorance made me trust like wanting to just protect myself. And I feel like there's enough information out there for people to make an informed decision. And so I'm like kind of like Jordan, like I don't walk around in skepticism thinking that everyone's out to get me. Mm-hmm. And so when the United States government puts out information on the CDC, I look at that. But I also wouldn't say I look at it and I trust it for the most part. I also wouldn't say that the United States healthcare system is like a gold standard of any kind, especially when it comes to marginalized communities. But I know that that's all relative, and so I recognize my own privilege. Like when Jordan was saying, you know, I've been regularly vaccinated as a kid. I would get my vaccinations growing up. I had regular dentist appointments. Now I'm able to get the care that I need when I need it.
Yeah,
and I know that that's a privilege. And the fact that healthcare is a privilege to begin with is the fucked up part.
Right.
And so absolutely, it's so easy to say, like just taking a look inward, that people are ignorant when it comes to following CDC guidelines, or they're silly or they're foolish. But I know that the system was not built for us or by us. And so we've always just been behind the eight ball, and that, you know, the healthcare system is no different than any other mm-hmm. aspect of systemic issues in this country.
Yeah. I think for me, it's been two things. Like when we got to the point where vaccines started to come out, I was not jumping at the chance initially. Mm-hmm. And what was really helpful for me, and we're going to go to a whole nother level of privilege, based on like the network of people we know going to Howard and so on, like I know Black doctors. Mm-hmm. I know mm-hmm. people who I've grown up with now at this point since we were in college, who are now doctors, who were able to thoroughly explain to me the research behind the vaccine,
yeah.
why it was able to be developed or sent to market quickly, because it was not just developed in the 1 year that most people, like the government did a very bad job of like marketing the thing.
Yeah.
And just, I had people in my life that could explain that. One of my brothers, Charles, who you know, he was like doing small videos online to like, that I sent to like my barber and to other people in our communities who may not have the same circle of connections and people that we have, to like, right. hopefully spread more of that information. And I think the second part is to, like, when it comes to doing research and understanding what's happening, use verified sources, people.
Mm-hmm.
Read the Times.
The girls.
Like the social media websites, unless, like, you can verify, like, this is an actual doctor talking to me, maybe you shouldn't watch a 30-second video telling you what you should or shouldn't believe about yeah. healthcare. Like, there's so much disinformation that I think it's important to do the extra step to make sure you're getting the right information and not just following whatever video your cousin sent you on Facebook or whatever, so on and so forth. So, like, that was the thing for me, thinking about verified sources in my own life, in yeah. the network that I'm very, very fortunate to have, but mm-hmm. also just being more thoughtful about how I look for and internalize information.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think that when it comes to just getting that information, there's so much out there that you, mm-hmm. when I see things, I mean, we've all been guilty of like, oh, you're so quick to send it and forward it to someone else without even like checking
right.
for another source that has the same mm-hmm. thing.
Right.
Because sometimes it is shock value. It's like, bitch, what?
Right.
Did y'all mm-hmm. see this? And yep. then it's like, wait, that, hold on now.
Right, like I didn't actually read that. Right. I just saw the photo right. and the headline, and I thought that was exactly. crazy. Right. Give me an emoji reaction to it. And it's like, wait, but like this doesn't make any sense
right.
in here.
Right. But speaking of what's crazy and emoji reactions and just our reaction in the queer space and the Black queer space when it comes to monkeypox, I want to know your thoughts about how we feel about people who seem to take monkeypox more seriously than COVID. Do we think that it is a reflection of a lesson learned, or do we think that it's more of a vanity thing? Jordan.
Interesting. Oh,
let's wow. start with you.
I mean, I can speak for myself and say that it's both.
Okay.
I think that obviously we're still dealing with COVID. right? We sort of went through that entire process of living in fear, not really having anything to protect us against it, and then it coming out. And for me, I was like an early adopter. I was like, sign me up, vax me up immediately. Day one, I'll be there. And for me, I saw how that process was. So when I saw that monkeypox was rolling out vaccines, I was very serious about it. And I was telling people, I'm like, look, there's a limited supply. Mm-hmm. I've been reading a bunch of articles about it. You need to be on that appointment website the second that it goes live. And you need to take it seriously, because it's going to be like COVID when the vaccines just came out. Mm-hmm. And that was a lesson learned. And the reason why I feel a bit more comfortable with the monkeypox vaccine is because this isn't a brand new vaccine. Right. The first human case of monkeypox was found in 1970. Mm-hmm. So there's been over 50 years of research mm-hmm. for monkeypox. And so there's a reason why this particular outbreak started in the United Kingdom in May. And in July in New York, we're able to get the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know, I'm automatically going to be a little bit more, just less reservations mm-hmm. around getting a vaccine when I feel like it's existing versus net new.
Yeah.
On the other side of the coin, do I want to have the physical side effects of monkeypox? Monkeypox? Absolutely not. Like, it's uncomfortable. I sit in front of a camera all day for work, in front of people all day for work.
Mother is on TV.
She is Barbara Walters.
We would be switching to a audio podcast.
Oh no, and I'm gonna make you sit right there. You ain't making we'd be like, and this is what happened.
And this is monkeypox.
and that would be the day that I walk out.
Oh my God.
And yeah, so for me, yeah, it's part of that. And it's a combination of the two. And I just think that there were resources in place for us to prevent it from happening. Mm-hmm. And I took it seriously. And I made sure that I was one of the first people to get the dose in New York because of that.
Beyonce said, whole lot of reservations. When that COVID came around, this monkeypox came around, the girls were saying, sign me up.
Oh, I was on it for both.
Think for now on, we should tell you fucking sissies that you're going to get bumps on your face whenever there's a health emergency. Niggas will be on PrEP, whatever the HIV medicine is. Mm-hmm. They be getting the COVID vaccine. Tell them that. Because the girls were, the Chelsea gays were running up to the Bronx to get a fucking shot trying not to get those damn bumps on their face. And it was just like, which is crazy.
They were lying at 2 in the morning.
It was just like, COVID can kill you. We good. We going to still go to the super spreader. You can get a bump on your face. Lord, sign me up.
Right.
That's and exactly, it's just like,
that's what happened.
That's literally what happened.
That's how the story went.
People were going to the super spreader while vaccinated, though.
Which one?
What I'm saying.
You talking about the when COVID?
No, you said
COVID,
that you said that people were like getting the monkeypox vaccine, but they were ignoring the COVID vaccine and going to a super spreader. I feel like people were equally as serious.
I feel like people were going to parties the entire COVID.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I feel like people were, we're talking about the seriousness of, well, I'm talking about like comparing the reaction to the vaccine.
Yeah, this time is a little different, but I think that's the question, right? Is it vanity, like, or is it a lesson learned from last time?
What preventative measure did you take more seriously? And I feel like people were equally trying to get the COVID vaccine and the monkeypox vaccine.
Bullshit, because most people can't even get the fucking monkeypox vaccine. Niggas are still in the club.
But do they want it?
I think people want the monkeypox vaccine.
Yeah,
I think people do. Same reason you did.
Exactly.
So I have a couple of things I want to say about this. So I'm going to start here. Like, somewhere deep down inside, like, despite wanting to believe that folks are taking this virus seriously, I know that vanity is a big, huge, glorified thing in the Black queer community and then the queer community overall. And so it's really hard for me to think that there's a heightened sense of urgency for this one just because there was a lesson learned. I think that people are like, oh no, I don't want that shit on my face. And
people are making internet joke videos about it. Everybody's saying the same thing.
Yeah, and they was giving that's on Mary Had a Little Lamb. but the gays, as we just described, will disregard a lot of shit. And like, I think when it came to something that is going to take, you know, give you a blemish on your face or your skin or the rash, and it hurts, like Jordan said, the pain. They talk about how it starts in like the butt and works its way out. I think that that is all scary. And
well, not always, you know, some
not,
cases.
Yeah, not always. But like hearing stories like that was like, ain't nobody got time for that. Black, white, Puerto Rican, Haitian, gay. Like, like no one has time for that. And that goes for, I think it's about what I, my mind goes back to is also, it's like not just this gay thing that the media is trying to say that it is. And so the, on the other hand, I think that it truly became the Hunger Games. It became the Hunger Games in everywhere, but in New York City, I feel like people were tapping into their resources. People were at the sign up on, you know, on the website at the moment it released. And I think there are some people that feel like folks had an upper hand. I think some people may have, but I feel like everyone was figuring it out. Some people were able to tap into to a resource and others weren't. But I think, I feel like some, I think what I'm trying to say is that some folks just think that we all are privileged and no black doctors and no, like we were all just trying to figure that shit out. And so that bothered, that bothers me when folks think that we're not sharing information, because I feel like we did a good job of like, once we knew something was up, people were sharing links to like, here's 10 doses at this place, here's 10 doses to that place.
Yeah.
And we did our part. So I think everyone just has to
get in where you fit in.
Get in where you fit in.
Well, you know, the right now the monkeypox vaccine is for people who are 18 and up, right? Men who are having sex with men, which means you're an adult. Which
the,
means that
it's vaccine?
Your
Yeah.
Which means you're responsible for your health.
Yeah.
And we all did our own personal research. You look on the I was looking on the CDC. You find out information. You subscribe to text messages. You figure out when the appointments are happening. Like, this is like just you, what you do.
Right. And like,
as an adult.
You sent us a thing. Like, we have the information, but like, before the sign-ups, Jordan was like, this is going live in a minute. And we didn't all, we weren't all able to get it. There are still some people who haven't. But I don't think that it's right to sort of paint these broad strokes on the black queer community and saying like folks aren't sharing information. I just don't like that narrative.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, if it's something you take that seriously, you also have the option to stay home, stay out of spaces where you are in close contact for prolonged periods of time. Like that's the thing that people don't want to do. And like, it was the same conversation with COVID. It's just like people don't, you don't want to make the sacrifice. I mean, I think that until we are in a space where everybody has access, you as an adult do a risk analysis on what you want to do with your life and what you don't want to do with your life. And I think that that is totally just personal.
Right.
And I think that any, like, I don't like having conversations where it's, I don't know, some like Hunger Games, we all against each other. It's just like everybody's trying to do the best they can with the resources that they have.
Right.
The reality is that there were limited doses. The second reality was that it was first come, first serve on those appointment websites. When I saw the words first come, first serve, that's when I went into Beyonce mode. Okay. And that's what you're like, I'm just,
that's what you had, you had to do.
I saw the article the first time when they were like, there were 1,000 doses, and then the tickets, like, or not the tickets, I'm really in a Beyonce state of mind right now. This gives me flashbacks to Roseland Ballroom, because I did not get tickets to that. But and that was a lesson learned. But you know, it's I think that it's like the Hunger Games sounds so animalistic, but I think that obviously, this outbreak wasn't planned. Or I like to believe it wasn't.
Right.
And it started in, the first case was in May in the United Kingdom. It had, you know, a moment in Europe where it was, you know, becoming a bigger outbreak. And then it came over to North America. And I feel like health officials are trying to do the best they can to get the doses out to people.
Right.
And I think that when you know that there is a scarcity, you make sure that you educate yourself and you figure out how you can protect yourself with the resources that are available. So we know that monkeypox are disproportionately or predominantly affecting men who have sex with men. So gay men, bisexual men, queer, trans folks. And I just want to know from your point of view, what do you think the government could be doing to
address this outbreak without further creating stigma around the queer community? Damon?
It's twofold. I think one, speaking very directly and fact-based to the people that it is affecting. That is a fact. It is affecting our communities or communities of men who have sex with men mm-hmm. more than others. Point blank, period. Mm-hmm. What I think needs to come out of the conversation, and this came from the podcast you sent me the other day.
Yeah.
And I was listening to it, and the doctor was saying that there's this obsession with trying to define it as an STI or not.
Yeah.
And he was just like, that's all really semantics. An infection is an infection, and how the infection happens doesn't really matter. You just treat the infection. And I think when we have conversations about STIs, and we have, there's so much shame attached to them in our society.
Yeah.
Like someone is so dirty because this happened. Like you can get an STI in the same way you catch a cold. Like yeah. not in the same way, but like it can happen to
just
anyone.
Just as
right. Like you can be having sex with a million people and not catch anything. You can have sex one time with someone that didn't know they had something and it happens to you.
Right.
But like we have all this shame attached to it, and I think that by constantly talking about is monkeypox an STI? Is it not? Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
It comes from close contact for extended periods of time. That's all that matters. That right. can be a long ass fucking hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that's the reality. And I think having this dialogue in the public sphere or just even medically around is it this, is it not, just like does a disservice to a community that for more than most, there's a much more sex positive community. And I think yeah. that it just demonizes people in a way that's not helpful to actually treating people. Like the facts are it's affecting you more than other people at this moment. Therefore, we are providing access for you to get vaccinated. End of story. How yeah. can we get the most people vaccinated? The rest of it is just noise, in my opinion.
Chow. Tony.
It's the noise for me. Just made me think of an old piece of advice from a mentor of mine, where she says, I manage through the noise, not to the noise. So yeah, write that one down. But no, speaking of the disparities between like the Black and white population, Black queer population, white queer population, I do want to read a point from the New York Times. And so New York City released new data just this week showing stark disparities between white New Yorkers who represent about 45% of the people with heightened risk of the virus, but accounted for 46% of vaccine doses, while Black New Yorkers make up 31% of the at-risk population and received 12% of doses administered so far to date. Like those numbers are,
well, if you were in line in Harlem,
what did you see?
It didn't look like Harlem.
It didn't. And that to me,
and even just to Jordan's point about like being on the website at that time,
right?
We work in a job where we're at a computer,
yeah,
most mm-hmm. of the day. Like
even with getting
a vaccination requires being at a computer at a specific time in the middle of the day, and you work a job that's hourly mm-hmm. or you have to commute at a certain time and so on and so forth. There are barriers in place for people in our communities that have less economic means, have different types of jobs, that yeah. have more volatile schedules that contribute to things like that.
Yeah. And
that's
and
a good just, point too, because you know, when you get on that site and you get an appointment, mm-hmm. you get the first appointment you could find. Like literally. I was blind when I was on that site. I didn't even know what I was clicking. I just saw like a button that was like available. And then I was just like, I'm going to move every meeting around so that I can mm-hmm. leave my home or leave my computer and be somewhere mm-hmm. to stand in line for this. And to your point, yes, that's a huge privilege mm-hmm. to have. And everyone doesn't have that convenience.
Yeah.
Right. But going back to the question about what can the government actually do to sort of address these issues without creating more stigma, the government is just so fucking frustrating. And I want to start by saying that the government continues to do what we allow them to do. And so in an ideal world, which I know we don't live in, people would mobilize and vote in representation that really is making changes. And that's what it's going to take, part of what it's going to take. But and no offense to like old people, because I am of the school of thought that institutional knowledge is so vital and important, but I'm ready for a lot of these old farts to literally get the hell out of Dodge, because it's time for them to go. Some of them. But that being said, I do think the messaging starts, well, from the messaging from the federal government has to be handled very carefully with kid gloves sometimes, because once the media takes a soundbite, they run with it and they make a mountain out of a molehill, mm-hmm. and there's no course correcting once the media gets a hold of it. But I don't think that it's always the federal government. And I say that only because what happens when information and resources and materials make their way to the states and at the local level? Mm-hmm. And how, what are states not doing to, doing or not doing to make sure that stigma isn't further leaned into, especially when the state is run by someone who doesn't give a fuck about our gay stigmas?
Well, y'all, Eric Adams don't like us, so.
Ciao. Eric Adams doesn't like queer people.
Well, that's for next season.
Well, so when I think about the government messaging, I got probably 90% of my information from the CDC, and I felt no trigger reading that information. I thought that they were very fact-based. They didn't say it was sexually transmitted. They said it was prolonged skin-to-skin contact. They said it was men who have sex with men. They gave statistics. There was a map that showed you what the outbreak was, and I was looking at it like a wild person, like seeing every like week how the infection rates were increasing. So I felt that the CDC was very cut and dry, fact-based. I think the issue that I have is with media outlets. And just this week, someone sent me, and we talked about this earlier in the episode, someone sent me an Instagram post, and the headline was about someone going, like someone's part of their face deteriorating because they were diagnosed with monkeypox, syphilis, and HIV. And it was this gruesome photo. Uh-huh. And it's that type of careless reporting that really, really, really makes it dangerous for our community. And I feel like it's those type of outlets that have those platforms and have those audiences that are sharing these things around and moving this message around, making monkeypox feel like this dirty thing that only happens to queer people because we're somehow more risky than the rest of the world, that leads to hate crimes, which leads to a couple walking down the street in Washington, D.C. and being attacked and called monkeypox faggots. Like, it leads to stuff like that. So I think that it sucks because the government or the CDC or the World Health Organization can come out and have the most scientific, fact-based information. It's still not going to stop media outlets from figuring out how to create a story that's going to drive more traffic to their platform.
Yeah.
And they're going to have articles and headlines and photos that are going to activate a group of people and create polarity, discourse, and create virality. Yeah. And that's where I feel like is the thing that really, really, really bothers me, and why I feel like even more in these sensitive times where information is so precious, look at the trusted sources. If you send me some shit from whatever .org blog you got it from, don't. Like, send me the articles from people who take their job in journalism seriously and understand that they have real world impacts on human beings. And that's been my issue with this this entire sort of messaging. It's been with media outlets versus just sort of like our healthcare organizations.
What's interesting is speaking of virality, this is a whole, it's related, but it's completely different, but it relates to the media, where now they're saying that people are attacking monkeys and they're like, don't attack the monkeys. They're innocent, you know, blah, blah, blah. But also there was those monkeys that were like kidnapping small children and throwing them off roofs.
What are we talking about?
No, did y'all not see that?
First of all, let's start here.
Like, that was happening too.
Let's start here.
So now it's a war of monkeys.
Also, let's go back a step.
Wait a minute, because now we're in Jumanji.
I don't know what's happening.
What was that movie with the monkey rage?
Planet of the Apes?
No, it was like 13. It was like, I can't remember the movie. It was going to come to mind. It was so crazy.
Okay, Tony's on timeout. Tiana, turn his mic off. The fuck was I going to say? Oh, no. The fucking monkeypox didn't even come from monkeys. No.
That part.
It needs to be renamed. Now, to half of Tony's point, now people are attacking the monkeys. Not the monkeys. How I get in?
No, it didn't even originate from monkeys.
They didn't even did nothing.
They got its name because monkeys used to carry the virus that came from somewhere else. back in the 70s, but like that is not even a relevant name anymore. And I believe the World Health Organization tried to
crowdsource
the public. I was like, oh my god,
that is crazy.
Everyone needs to stop.
Everyone just needs to slow down.
Channel all that energy and find a donation and give it so they can make more doses so that I can get my second dose.
That part.
Right, because they put me on pause.
Put in that strange part of the back of my arm.
I'm like, okay, I know some girls still need the first one, so it's okay. I'll give up my second one for that. But still, it's like, we got bigger fish to fry.
I wonder if this was the movie 28 Days Later. 28 Days Later. That was the movie, I think. And it was like these monkeys that, it was based in the UK, and these monkeys gave you some sort of like virus, and literally.
I'm really happy that we still lean into edutainment, no matter what the subject matter is here at Surface Level.
Well, you know
I think we have a serious moment, please.
You know what? Let's get, we had the edutainment moment. Let's get back into education. So as we said earlier, we are not health experts. So this is what we know about monkeypox as of August 2022. According to the CDC, monkeypox infection rates in New York City appear to be slowing down due to increased vaccinations, but they're still slowly rising nationwide. Men who have sex with men are at higher risk of infection, accounting for over 95% of recorded infections. The vast majority of cases are attributed to prolonged skin-to-skin contact, which could include cuddling or sexual intimacy. Monkeypox is rarely life-threatening. However, a temporary focus on safety preventative measures around intimacy can help contain the outbreak. To learn more, you can visit stopmonkeypox.org, which is a Google Doc, to see vaccine clinics around the country. You can follow at Impulse United on Instagram for helpful tips to protect yourself. And if you're in New York City, text monkeypox to 692-692 to receive real-time push notifications of when vaccine appointments become available. Get vaccinated and get educated.
We love education,
hello,
information, and we're sharing. Sharing is caring. So that's all the time we have this week. This season, we're raising money for the Ollie Forney Center, an organization committed to protecting LGBTQIA+ youths from homelessness and empowering them to live independently. One of the ways you can help is by donating to the fundraiser on our Instagram page. And let's keep the conversation going by submitting questions and comments to surfacelevelpodcast.com. And remember, stay curious.